Welcome to the Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Jonathan Nicholas. Keeping us on track and out of trouble is our producer for the show, Tom McGowan. And now, on to the Property Beat.
All right, good morning. Got my coffee ready to go. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Property Beat. Today we are going to be talking technology and luxury real estate. Now, we've covered some luxury real estate before, but not this way. These gals, our guests today, are just some top producers that have got some real good insights on this kind of niche market, if you will, and some of the technology that has driven their brokerage to some really high levels of success. So, with that, my co-host, Jonathan Nicholas. Good morning, Jonathan.
Well, good morning. How are you this morning?
I am on my second cup of coffee and feeling pretty darn good about it.
I'm very jealous. I have not had a chance to fill up the cup again, but I'll be there with you, I'm sure, momentarily. I'm excited about today's show. We've got a great, I call them the powerhouse trio out of the Boston market, and I am excited to hear what we've got to talk about today, especially when it comes to technology. I'm thinking maybe fax machines. What do you think?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was looking at, you know, you look at your machines around the office and you realize, wow, I don't ever use that anymore. Or what was
exactly
that thing for?
I can remember when I had a fit. I mean, through a big fit. This is, of course, years ago, and I'm dating myself, when I found out that my wife had sold our IBM Selectric 2 typewriter in a garage sale.
Yeah, I can't. You know, it's funny because a typewriter used to be a regular staple in an office, and boy, you just don't see those anymore. It's hysterical.
Absolutely.
Wow. So, folks, we're going to be joined by our two special guests, who are two of the three that are owners in a very interesting brokerage that does a lot of high-end real estate. They're going to be sharing their experience in launching their luxury brokerage and just in a challenging market. I mean, they've built this thing in the last few years, which has certainly been an interesting time to build a firm.
Absolutely. And talk about taking the bull by the proverbial horns. They've done that and had success. And we want you to get involved in the conversation as a listener out there of the Property Beat. You don't have to just write. You don't have to just email, though. Please do so. Seriously, we've got to get you involved here at the Property Beat. Please, by calling us at 347-989-0439. Again, that's 347-989-0439. You know, Cliff, I've been trying to write that on every bathroom wall I can find across the country.
Yeah, we're getting calls, all right, but not the kind we want.
Exactly. Now, you can email us also, questions@thepropertybeat.com, or go to our website, which, of course, if you don't know by now, you haven't been listening, is thepropertybeat.com.
You clearly aren't even listening to the show, so what's the point?
So you can submit a question to a guest if you see an upcoming episode, and maybe you can't make it for that episode. You'd like to submit a question, you can do that. So we also have a question of the week, and if you have a question that's on your mind, you need an answer to, and you don't want to turn anywhere else, but you want to turn to us. Yes, us. Be sure to visit our show archive on iTunes as well, or go to the propertybeat.com website, and you can download any of our episodes as well. So a lot of resources there for you. And by the way, we have the Find the Agent tab. You know, we had someone call in this last week looking for an agent in a remote area. We were able to put them in touch with somebody. So go to that tab, find an agent, fill out what you're looking for, and we'll put you in touch with an agent in your, what I call, neck of the woods that is a competent professional in your marketplace.
There you go. And I'm wondering about this remote area. Are we talking Ghana?
No,
we can help with that, actually. That's the funny part. Okay.
That's probably true.
Oh, Lord. All right. Well, before we get to our guests and subject for today, we've got a couple of real estate stories we're going to be bringing you right after this important message. We'll be right back.
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. Me clap, rap. Snap, crackle, like crispies. I say it's crackle, the crispy sound. You gotta have crackle or spots not found.
the best was missed unless Pop's around. You can't stop hopping and the stereo's popping.
All right, it's time once again for real estate news here at Property Beat.
Well, talking about Rice Krispies, did you get your year supply delivered to the house the other day?
Thanks, buddy. Oh, Lord. Well, folks, we like to start off, give you a couple of news, things that are happening in the marketplace. Sometimes they're serious, sometimes they're not. So, Jonathan, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, it would help if I had my my stories ready to go.
Okay.
I absolutely do. Well, I off the top of my head, I do know that there was an interesting article that I'd seen came out from the National Association of Home Builders, and they were talking about what's going to be changing or what to look for as far as trends and design and new construction. And I thought it was interesting to make note of a few of the things that were happening with that. And what we're seeing is, of course, over the years, a departure from the formal areas, you know, that everyone had, always had a formal dining room, always had a formal living room or study. And, of course, those things have gone by the wayside. They're saying, you know, there was even a den that they were calling a formal den in addition to that family gathering area. Those are now going away and being replaced by other areas such as a pocket office. I thought that was interesting. And in new floor plans, you're starting to see a smaller, not a dedicated full big room,
yeah,
but kind of a...
I'm thinking little teeny space for your computer and you.
Well, you know, years ago, you saw in especially the big country kitchens, you saw a planning desk, what they used to call it, you know, off to the side. And that's coming back. These could be in the kitchen, but most often now they're in a part of the utility room or they're in kind of like a craft area, just a small, out of the way area that you can have a flat screen and have your computer set up in a place to, once again, as we did 30 years ago, plan, you know, for the happy homemaker there. So that's one of the design trends that we're seeing. Some of the other things that's going on with larger homes especially is that we're seeing multiple utility rooms. However, in this case, many of the newer utility rooms are located adjacent to the master bedroom closet. Now, I saw this firsthand as we were touring a property not too long ago where there were stackable washer and dryers right next to the master bedroom closet. They're actually dedicating space now upstairs or, of course, near the bedrooms as they've done for the last decade or so, but literally right in the master bedroom. So I think that's an interesting trend that we're starting to see. Other things that they're talking about in this article, they were talking about how the outside facade of homes, they're changing to much more straight lines and less lines on the roof line. But we're also seeing corner windows. Now, I think it's interesting to read this article because these are trends that were that came and gone in previous decades, like corner windows where two windows would meet at the corner joint. That was very popular in 1950s ranch-style construction. So that is coming back again because it's all about being able to see the outdoor spaces along with the old picture windows. So there you go. There's just a few little hints of what you might see in the upcoming builder shows.
You know, there's also been, just piggybacking on that, in Manhattan and Chicago and now in San Francisco, we're starting to see these micro condos and micro units that are basically smaller than small studios. It'll be interesting to hear from our guests whether they have any of that in their marketplace, like in the Boston area, for example. But anyway, okay, so in the news that is there's two stories I'm bringing you, but I want to start off with the most important one, I think, in some ways. Wells Fargo, which is like one of the nation's leading lenders right now, has just announced as of the 13th that they will no longer be using wholesaling tactics or working with mortgage brokers through a wholesale department for their loans. They're only going to be doing a direct lender. They were a direct lender at one point, and they ended up going into the mortgage brokerage side because what they found was when they were a direct lender, their loans weren't competitive. Their rates were typically a little bit higher. People would go and find this out, and then, of course, go someplace else. And then in turn, Wells went out and said, okay, wait, maybe we better embrace the mortgage broker environment. They did. Their rates became very competitive. And now they're going back the other way, which I find absolutely interesting.
It is.
It just means it's going to be harder. I don't know. They're saying that they're not tying to this DOJ settlement that they had, but something's going on here. You know, they're trying to in some way blame the little guy that was helping them place the loan as opposed to their own underwriting departments.
But, absolutely. Well, I read an article where they're going to close a record quarter this quarter, $170 billion, Wells Fargo, just them. That's all-time records for the company, which I think is interesting. So maybe they've tapped into the investor market or the REIT market or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they certainly are doing a lot. Now, talking about financing and freeing up funds, I don't know if you saw that the home builders are now starting to issue new stock. And they're trying to raise money. And this is a telltale sign as to how they feel about the market. If several of the national builders, and when I talk about those builders, Beazer Homes, Meritage, those groups are raising money to actually build, for the future. So interesting little trend.
Yeah. Well, and then something we like to touch on often is staying in touch, if you will, with what's going on in the foreclosure market. And California just became the first state to basically apply their own kind of homeowner's bill of rights to protect homeowners from those evil lenders trying to foreclose on them. And there's about four key points here. The one thing is that they will not allow dual tracking foreclosures, meaning that if a borrower is in the process of a loan modification, they have to stop the foreclosure process. They can't be pushing them on the foreclosure side while also pushing them on the loan modification side. They also have in the state law requires them now to also have a single point of contact, which is definitely going to be helpful for homeowners when they're in the process of a loan negotiation or loan modification. And then there's an injunction that this law puts into place against any foreclosures. If there's any kind of a violation of this law or violation of the loan modification process or foreclosure process. Now, the California Association of Realtors in particular did not like that part of the provision because they saw this as, wait a minute, everybody's going to file a lawsuit now because they're always going to at least claim that their lender did not follow proper foreclosure process.
Oh, please tell me this is some kind of practical joke.
It isn't. It's not even funny. But anyway, so it is good for the homeowner who's been beat up by the bank and told, yeah, sure, we won't foreclose on you. And while they're trying to modify a loan, and then they get a knock on the door that says, hey, by the way, you don't own your house anymore. We do. So there
much
you go.
Of that. Yeah, so much of that has happened. It's really unfortunate. I think, don't you, that it's the left hand that doesn't realize what the right hand's doing. Different departments of the bank doing different things at different times.
You know, it is true, and I think the problem that gets exacerbated here is that a lot of the legislators don't really understand what's going on at the ground level. So they end up creating these laws with some very idealistic principles in mind, not thinking through what's going to be the potential impact to this process. So, folks, we're going to be right back with some questions from you, our listeners, right after this quick message.
Fruit juicy. Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
Sure.
You taste 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. Hawaiian punch is made with 7 kinds of fruit for a one-of-a-kind fruit taste.
Hawaiian punch fruit punch with 10% real fruit juice for a real fruit juicy taste.
Hawaiian punch is made with 7 kinds of fruit
for a one-of-a-kind fruit taste.
All right, welcome back to the Property Beat. And as always, we love it when you call in, you write in. If you'd like to join in our conversation with our special guests, Debbie Benoit and Amy Meisner today, you can do so by calling 347-989-0439. But before we get to our guests, we'd like to just listen to your questions. So let's start off with a question from Kevin in Elmhurst, Illinois.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Kevin. Due to a relocation, I need to sell my home, but I have no equity and can't afford a realtor. Do realtors ever work by the hour? Thanks. Get back to me.
A lot of them wish they could.
Yeah, I actually wish they had hourly wage and benefits. So that's interesting. What do you think about that, Cliff?
I think there's a couple of some assumptions going on there that perhaps Kevin isn't aware of. Kevin, so for example, realtors are basically paid by you, the seller, or by your lender in a situation where you have a short sale, which it sounds like you might have because you have no equity, you're saying. But they're going to get paid at the closing. They don't get paid. You don't have to pay them hourly or in advance. So that might be one possible solution for you to understand that. The other thing is that if he's got a relocation package going on with his, if he's relocating as part of a job and his employer is offering a relo package, he needs to really talk with them because they're going to insist that the property is listed and there's going to be some process they're going to need to go through. But, you don't need to pay an agent an hourly wage. I guess if somebody asked you, in fact, I'd be a little bit concerned, you know, hey, could you pay me $15 an hour and give me a couple hundred bucks advance right now?
That's interesting. It's a good point on the relocation. I do like that point. You know, there's one other alternative where you have real estate consultants that are out there working on a retainer fee and a hourly fee charged as a credit toward closing. You know, if you're buying through them, then they'll credit some of that hourly fee back towards your cost. Or if you're selling, of course, it would just be an adding up of all the hours and then charging. But there are certainly some places that or people that do that. And if you want to go to that Find an Agent tab, Kevin, and fill that out, we can put you in touch with a true certified real estate consultant that would work more like a lawyer. It's not going to be cheap, probably won't be any cheaper than using a traditional real estate agent.
We do have to be careful on this particular area if, in fact, he's going to be a short sale, because under the federal MARS guidelines, he cannot be required to pay any money for any service relative to that short sale up front or as a requirement of service. They can only be paid upon performance. So you got some protection on your side there. All right. So there you go, Kevin. And we've got a question from Sarah in Charlotte, North Carolina. Sarah, what do you got?
Hi, guys. What's the difference between an agent and a real estate broker?
One has more money than the other? Wait, broker? Take a tackle at that one, Jonathan. That's pretty easy.
Let's see. Yeah, the real estate agent and real estate broker, which are two terms that seem to be going away quicker and quicker every year with each state legislature, as they're mostly going toward a single licensing status. But in the heyday of real estate, in most states that are out there now, agent is the typical agent that is working with you out there every single day and selling and listing real estate, and the broker is who is employing that agent. So the agent works for a sponsoring or a managing broker that typically either manages the office or owns the office. So that's typically the difference. You can be a broker and not own an office and also put your license with a managing or a sponsoring broker.
There you go. This is about as good as it gets. All right, well, if you'd like to be part of our conversation, how can they post a question or get in and leave a voicemail question like this?
Well, certainly go to thepropertybeat.com, and you'll see questions right at the top. Click on that, and it gives you the options to submit a question or to record a question for delivery on the show.
There you go. Well, folks, we're going to be right back with our special guests, Debbie Benoit and Amy Meisner, right after this break.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to teach the world to sing with me.
I'd like to teach the world to sing and
guests this week are Amy Meisner and Debbie Benoit. Now, these two have joined forces, if you will, with Cheryl Simon, who's their business partner, to create a company in Weston, Massachusetts, basically. And this is a powerhouse luxury brokerage called, let me see if I can get this right, it's Benoit, Meisner, Simon, and Company. I hope that I did that right. Each of these individuals were successful agents in their own right. However, by launching their company together, joining forces, they have closed $140 million in sales. And now they have two offices catering to the Wellesley. Is that how you pronounce that? Wellesley? I got to figure that one. Wellesley. Okay, there we go. At Weston Market. So good morning with that, Debbie and Amy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Cliff and Jonathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So now, I know you've been listening to the show as we've been going, and you're probably asleep by now, but we're going to wake you up because what you don't know is that we always like to start off by asking our guests, you know, to tell us a little bit of something about you that nobody else knows. Give us an insight of something in your background, something you've done, someone you've met, a place you've visited, something that just gives us a clue to who you are that is interesting and our listeners might find intriguing. So what have you got for us, ladies? Who's going first?
Well, Cliff, I'd like to first say that your caller who asked if we were paid by the hour, we absolutely laughed, and we both said, we wish, as you said,
yeah.
They wish. So
yeah.
we agree with your sentiment there. Hourly paychecks would be much better. So we do a lot of work before we get to the closing table. Anyway.
That's true.
Amy and I were actually sharing our thoughts of what made us get into this business and what actually kind of brought us to the real estate business. Amy
uh-huh.
was a successful ad executive, and I was in interior design before our real estate fields 20-some-odd years ago. And we both had real estate experience where the brokers, which we were kind of going around looking at properties,
mm-hmm.
We're not that polished and professional, and we both said, wait a minute, there's a niche here. We can do this much better, and that has continued to be our mantra, as you say.
And it was taking our business backgrounds and saying, not only can we do it better, we could just raise this bar at a level that we just weren't seeing. And that clicked in when I was a buyer many years ago looking for my first condo in Back Bay in Boston, and a top producer was taking me through the condo, and it was a unit that needed a lot of updating, and they got to the kitchen and they wanted to point out one of the luxury features of the kitchen, and opened up the side cabinet door and showed me this crusty old Lazy Susan.
There you go.
And spun it around. And it was dirty, and it was plastic, and to me, as a consumer, I'm going, I'm tearing this out. This is not a luxury feature of this kitchen. And at that point, the light went off and said, don't insult my intelligence. I can do this better.
Yeah, and I had a similar experience where I was looking for my first home in Wellesley, and the broker walked into each room. This is the living room. This is the dining room, and I thought,
yeah, the big
really?
Tour.
Oh, okay. So it's very funny, and Amy, Cheryl, and I, we've actually kind of maintained that high professional bar throughout our career, and I think, you know, that makes such a difference. And we've had competitors recently, you know, since we've opened our company, say we've done things very differently, and they've said to us, you know, you keep raising the bar, and we take that as the biggest compliment you could give us.
Uh-huh.
And also just one other thought is that the one thing that I found in common with my new partner, Cheryl and I were partners for many years and veterans at Coldwell Banker, and Debbie was a veteran at Coldwell Banker, before starting this venture. But the one common bond was our entrepreneurial spirit. And when we started talking, it took on a life of its own with a very similar vision of what we needed to create. With all those years of experience of working for a large brand and creating something different that was exciting and that was needed coincidentally in a very changing market. So our timing couldn't have been better.
Okay. Well, all right. So now we'd like to remind our listeners that if you'd like to get in on the questions here, just give us a call at 347-989-0439.
Well, Debbie and Amy, let's get an overview of how the three of you together, the principals, came together to create this new brokerage.
Well, Amy actually called me about a question during tax season because we had a very similar business model within a large company. And I had already been looking into going into business on my own, and I asked Amy if she had ever thought about going on her own, and she said, for the last 2 years, Debbie. I said, oh, my gosh, Amy, I am going down that path right now. And she said, we have to talk. We met the next day, and the rest is history. We absolutely put the plan in place, and we took 1 year to launch this business.
Wow. It's talking about being at the right place at the right time and in the right mindset. So it kind of came about. Now, looking back, would you do anything differently in the brokerage? You know, I'm sure there were some growing pains or some startup pains. What would you do differently today if you could do it all over again?
We thought about that. We've talked about that. And I just think you're never really emotionally prepared until you do it. But what we found looking back is we didn't have any regrets or anything that we would have done differently because we spent so much time planning.
Oh,
and
yes.
We planned our exit, you know, very strategically, and we did have people that we were working with sign confidentiality agreements, so we were able to kind of speak freely and kind of put things in motion, and we really did take our time to make sure it was done right. Amy and Cheryl have been the number one brokers in Weston for almost consecutively 10 years, and I have been the number one broker in Wellesley for 6 years. So we had such a track record. You know, the one thing we know how to do is sell houses. So we wanted to put that in motion in our own company, and the branding, we had both branded in very similar ways outside the larger company. So it just made sense. We've had numerous assistants working with us at the time. We transitioned very, very well. I think the location where we have both offices, we have an office in Wellesley and in Weston Square, and I think that was the toughest part, was finding the right location, because as you know, with realtors, location, location, location.
But I think taking the expertise of the three of us, I think really made the difference. What we've learned in creating a brand is it's the people behind the brand that makes it successful. And without the years of experience and the relationships that we've had, I don't think our launch would have been as successful.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, interesting, you've made a couple of comments on raising the bar and how people in the community and other agents, other realtors have mentioned that too. You know, you're always raising the bar. Give us an example of that. When you hear that, what are you thinking of when they say that?
Well, I think just if you look at our marketing and our advertising, I think people, when you sit there and say you want to give them unparalleled service, they expect that. So we wanted to give more than what was just expected, and we wanted our advertising, our marketing, to have a fresh approach that had an intelligent look that spoke to the buyers. So we took the tools that were in our marketplace and explored them, and we really wanted to get right down to giving it a new look to everything else that was out there and to cut through the clutter.
We did a lot of marketing things that, you know, usually in real estate companies, you take a listing, you plug into the marketing plan, blah, blah, blah. We didn't want any of that. We wanted a fresh approach, as Amy said. So we did things very differently. We have monitors in our window that have constant pictures of our listings going on. We also have another monitor in our windows that actually have our agents, you know, going round and round. So we also have every single one of our listings, we have an individual website for, and no one had done that in this area. Now, of course, you know, it's like Pied Piper, right? We have several companies that are copying that aspect of our marketing. You know, used to open the newspaper and used to have a long description under each picture. You know, no one read those descriptions. And mm-hmm. we now have just the individual websites because that's what they want. They want to know how much the property is, it's priced for, and they want to go online. So this way they avoid logging on. They just go right to that property. So that has become a trend now in our area because, you know, we've been at the forefront doing that. So, you know, it's a lot of it, as Amy says, it's the look, it's the sophistication, and it's using the tools that are out there appropriately and giving the buyers really what they want.
You know, it's taking the electronic media and integrating that with the print media.
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
the first thing. That's really the difference that we brought to our specific market. We didn't invent a website that's individual to each listing. That's been out there forever. But the way we use that as the electronic calling card to launch each listing with our print advertising was done very differently in our market.
Okay, I want to hear more about that because I got a couple of comments and questions because I want to piggyback on that. But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our special guests, Amy Meisner and Debbie Benoit.
Hi, Charlie. What you watching?
Ballet.
Oh, how is it?
Too soon to tell. So far, it's been nothing but dancing. But I'll watch it anyway to show Starkist my good taste.
But surely, Starkist don't want tuners with good taste. Starkist wants tuners that taste good.
Hey, that's for me.
Sorry, Charlie. Only good-tasting tuna get to be Starkist. Good-tasting 100% prime fillet.
This is good-tasting tuna.
Get Starkist tuna.
Note the name. Starkist.
All right. Welcome back to the Property Beat, where we are talking with special guests Amy Meisner and Debbie Benoit of Benoit Meisner Simon & Company in Weston, Massachusetts. So you were talking about, you know, it's interesting, you were talking about the way you're not taking necessarily new technology, you're just implementing these things together in a different formula or a different way. I was listening to somebody talk on NPR the other day who was defining the term innovation, and they were saying that innovation is not necessarily about creating a new technology, though that's what they typically think of in Silicon Valley, but it can be just as innovative and disruptive to a market or an industry by taking technologies that are already out there and putting them together in a different combination. And that sounds like exactly what you're doing. Would you agree?
Yeah, and it's very interesting. There have been brokers out there that are so tech savvy that the technology overtakes their business, and they're not top producers in our market.
Mm-hmm.
You have 5 iPhones and 3 Blackberries and 20 different emails and just do a huge amount of internet marketing, and I look at their production and it's not up there. So
yeah.
It's really how you embrace the technology, and it doesn't substitute for the knowledge that the individual has behind that technology. There's just no substitution for the substance behind it.
Like you say, it's using the technology that's appropriate and using it to its max, and also following the trends. You know, this is the trend right now. Next year, there'll be a different trend.
You know, I think you guys have also started a new trend. And I'm looking at your website here, and I'm looking at the About Us. You have the most attractive agents I've ever seen in a company.
We like to think so.
And good photographers.
Yeah.
We have an excellent photographer, Eric Berry in Wellesley. He's fantastic.
Oh,
and
gosh.
He actually only works for our company, so we are so lucky to have him.
Well, I'd be afraid to apply for a job there. Oh, my Lord.
You know, I'll tell you that if you read the bios, we just have such diverse business backgrounds that is brought to Benoit Meisner Simon, and it's just our company's been so successful because of that.
You know, since you mentioned the backgrounds, is it a rumor only that you have a TV and radio degree in your background?
Yeah, my first career for 15 years was working in the glory days of advertising.
Uh-huh.
At Arnold Communication, I produced TV commercials and worked on clients like BMW, Timberland, fashion, you name it, and traveled around the world doing that, and then started directing. actually. Mm-hmm. But then with little children, the traveling became overwhelming, and I wanted to get into investment and wanted to do something that was more business oriented, and took those skills and got my real estate license.
Yeah, and Zap, you know, isn't it funny how nobody goes to school these days and says, you know what, I'd like to be a realtor.
Seems like it's always a fallback of something.
It is.
But I think the most successful real estate brokers are people that have business backgrounds. Because
that's right.
If you don't treat this like a serious business, then you're not going to survive today.
I think we have more MBAs in our company than we can even think about. So we always, one of our taglines is the smarter real estate choice, and for a reason.
I love it.
You
I love
it. You know, we had to negotiate.
There it is. So what are your biggest challenges facing you in the market today?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Challenges.
What are your biggest challenges facing you in the marketplace today?
I'll tell you what the biggest challenge is. Keeping our clients happy.
Oh boy,
I mean,
a
client is happy if they're making money with their investments. Mm-hmm. A buyer is happy if they feel they've gotten a good value. So it's really keeping our clients happy and staying connected to them. It's a tough market to put deals together, just in bringing those two parties together.
I think the negotiations between buyer and seller have never been more difficult.
Yeah, isn't it funny? It seems to be like every deal. It used to be you could sell a house and it was a dumb sale, you know, no matter what the price was. But now it seems like everything, you got to work through everything. Are you finding that?
Yes, I think it's so funny you say that because, you know, many years ago, Aunt Sue or your neighbor, anybody who would get a listing would sell it easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our numbers have skyrocketed in the last, you know, I'd say 5 to 8 years, basically because in a down market, you have to have skills and you have to have the negotiation skills to get everybody through the process. And it has been more difficult, and of course, everyone's portfolios and investments have gone down, and it just adds to a different mindset.
Also, the buyers are so connected through the information that they have at their fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
So that has also made it, I think it's better, but it also has made the deals, you know, more challenging too, because, you know, they're bringing their resources to the table as well.
Well, you're leading me right into kind of my next question, which is that, you know, how are you finding your buyers for properties these days, for these luxury properties, and what expectations do they have that might be different from a normal buyer?
The buyers are coming through the internet.
Okay.
And they're out looking at properties unencumbered by brokers. They have all the information at their fingertips. They're either out at open houses on Sundays, which any real estate agent who's not working on Sundays, you know, get out of the business because that's
right.
That's your most important day, open house day.
Mm-hmm.
So they're either there or they're actually calling the listing brokers for private sales. You know, they know everything almost that we know as far as stats and what's selling for what because all that information is available on the internet. What they don't know is the backstories and, you know, valuable information that can help them, you know, negotiate. So that's why they need a buyer broker. But they're really coming through the internet, really. And they're coming out from Boston into the suburbs. You know, I always say babies in a bucket. You know, they have their young families and they've got to sell their, you know, first purchase their condo in Boston, and they're looking for, you know, backyards and school communities and all that. So
I can't get past the babies in a bucket. It brought back a visual. You know, there's been times where Jonathan and I have both been in the bucket sometimes. All right. Oh, Lord. Lord, Jonathan, we got a question from a listener. You want to?
Absolutely. We got Carol, actually, in Framingham, Massachusetts. She's calling in. She's saying, I have a property that's lingered on the market for almost 2 years now, and how can you revive a tired property listing to give it a new chance at actually selling? So she wants to still get it sold. How does she do that now after 2 years?
Well, hi, Carol. You know, that is what differentiates a great broker and just a good broker. You know, without knowing the property, a lot of it has to do with how it's positioned in the market, with the pricing. It's all about price. It's how it looks on the internet, how it's photographed. It's how it's being represented. And I think you should, you know, if you feel that you're not accomplishing what you need to, you know, speak to various brokers in your community or various top producers and see what could be done to give the listing a new life for why it hasn't sold.
Good answer.
Yeah, do you, I mean, all right, what's the number one issue? Isn't it always price? That's what I hear all the time. I mean, isn't that kind of the big issue with a lot of these?
It's price, 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 and it's positioning in the market. You don't want to follow the market down. You want to lead the market and get the most dollar value by doing that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You ultimately save money. Yeah.
Carol might want to even go and take a look at the internet and see how her home is being marketed. You know, you bring up a great point. Perhaps there's only one picture of it, you know, just the front exterior. Maybe there's no other thing driving interest for the buyer. So positioning, I think that's great. And people with the marketing mindset understand that. People that don't have no clue.
There you go. So we've slapped Carol around on her price and her photos. And
well,
thanks for that question, Carol. Okay, we'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question you'd like to ask our guests, Debbie Benoit and Amy Meisner, you can simply call us at 347-989-0439. We'll be right back after this quick message.
From San Francisco comes...
Right, a Roni, the San Francisco treat. Right, a Roni, the flavor can't be beat. One pan, no boiling, cooking ease.
The flavor that is sure to please.
Rice
Aroni,
the San Francisco treat.
Rice Aroni, the delicious break from potatoes, now in six fabulous flavors.
One pan, no boiling, cooking ease.
The flavor that is sure to please.
Rice Aroni, the San Francisco treat.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Property Beat, where we're talking luxury real estate marketing technology. If you have a question, join in, 347-989-0439.
So how is technology helping you and your brokerage to deliver a higher level of service?
You know, it's how you stay connected to the buyers. That's how the technology is helping us.
Moment.
I've never used texting so much to stay connected with my clients. So it's as simple as, you know, 5 years ago you weren't texting, you know, not negotiating a deal, but just yes, no, simple ways of staying connected while people are multitasking and doing other things, speaking with business people that are in meetings and confirming appointments. So just through, you know, texting and iPhones and really has made transactions go a lot smoother.
I actually recently sold a house with a broker who was away on vacation, and we had had several showings with this particular buyer. And we did the negotiations 100% through text.
Oh,
and I've never done that before. And it was very interesting, and it actually went quite quickly because it was all, you know, very short and sweet, you know, price, closing date, what they wanted. And she just didn't have the ability to chat, so we did the texting and it worked. So that could be very well in our future as well. Also, you know, just I think the websites and all of the virtual tours and, you know, the buyers have so much more knowledge than they did, you know, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago. There's just so much more available to them. It just makes them a more educated consumer, which makes them, you know, savvy buyers.
Talking about texting, it was funny. I was doing a seminar, a technology seminar, and I had an agent in the classroom come up from the back during one of the breaks, and she said, "My phone keeps making a funny sound. I can't figure out what it is. I've been looking at it, and I looked at it." And I said, "That's because you have 24 text messages." And she didn't even know how to answer a text. She didn't even know her phone did that. So that's what's odd is that buyers will assume, or clients will assume, that you do know how to do that, and a lot of agents don't. So But now, what technologies are being utilized? You said that you've got virtual tours, and you're using texting, and you're using, it sounds like, a lot of online marketing. Anything else in there that you want to put in the mix?
I guess, well, all the social media. You need, with Facebook and Twitter
and
blogging and YouTube. I mean, I think it's how you embrace it. I think if you have something to tell, if it's whether it's a new listing or it's a special open house or it's a special event, you really want to get it out virally. And it's how it's linked to all, and how you know, and how you communicate that to your buyer pool. I think it's not one element; it's how it all works together.
Absolutely, how it dovetails all together. Now, how would you compare the average consumer's grasp of technology compared to the average agent's grasp of technology? Not necessarily in your brokerage, but in general. How would you compare the two?
Well, I can tell you the top producers are embracing it. And the old-timers that were the top producers that aren't embracing it, I'm seeing it affecting their numbers.
Absolutely. You listen, you can't beat them. You have to join them. So you better, all the agents better learn how to do this, because that is where all of the consumer interaction and consumer communications are. YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, blogging, you know, all the iPhones, you know, are out there. You can take pictures of a listing. You know, I've had clients say, can you go take a video of the listing for me, because they're in California. And that new listing, we won't be able to come out for 10 days, but we want to take a look at it. And there was not a virtual tour. So I go over there and do the video on my iPhone, send it, and in minutes, they've done a walkthrough of the house. So things like that. I mean, you just really have to be up on all technology. If you're not, you're going to be left in the dust.
Well, in fact, this is, let me piggyback. There's a question that just came in by email from Ira in Concord, New Hampshire. It says, what are the basic technology skills I should require when interviewing my realtor? What do you think?
He's demanding from a realtor, or that he should be having?
Yeah, no, he's a client, it looks like, and he's interviewing realtors for, I guess, a listing, I'm assuming. I mean, what sort
Let
of...
me just say one thing. It's all about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think if somebody lets the technology overtake the person, if we're interviewing somebody and they don't use, I actually had a client that doesn't do email, doesn't have they have a cell phone number, but they don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to adjust the way you work to work for that client. That client should not be adjusting to work for the broker. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I don't know, but I feel that if it's somebody that is not comfortable with that technology, there's nothing like leaving a handwritten note. There's nothing like calling on a phone. It's a people business. You have to use technology to enhance that communication, not to make somebody feel stressed out.
If he's looking to see what it is that the realtor should be doing, then it is photography, it is videos, it is writing the blurb on MLS, you know, using the appropriate language to describe the property and entice the buyers to come and see it. You know, too many pictures are too much. You need a buyer to come and see a listing, you know, and have a reason to come and see it. If he's asking those questions, then it should be websites, photography, virtual tours, and they should be on all the social media. That's what it takes to sell a house. So if he's asking that question, it's those, you know, they've got to use all of those technologies.
Well, and let me, I want to come back to the technology and the social media question, because I think there's a couple of good points that I'm looking at your site and things you guys are doing. Amy said an interesting thing that I really think is important, that you have to really be consumer-centric, in that we have clients that, in our marketplace here in Marin, we have an older demographic that are the sellers, and we have a younger demographic that are the buyers. So we have very different technology issues going on, because a lot of the sellers, they don't even have an email account. They don't even have any kind of social media account. They just want you to come in over with a piece of paper. They don't have a fax machine, versus the buyer who's going, just send it to me by email. Just So it really does need to be customer-centric. So
it's still a sales business.
It is a people business, absolutely.
People. Right.
So now, how are you using social media? What are you doing on your Twitter account that someone else is? I mean, how do you use these Twitter and the Facebooks and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, you get to a certain level in your business, it's important to have a staff that handles that because it's time-consuming, and we have things in place at our company that's been automatic once the listing is signed up. And it's an automatic that it gets announced. It's an automatic that the open houses are announced, that the broker open houses are announced. So there's a certain thing that goes on that behind the scenes just it gets out there virally. And then it's up to each individual agent to customize that and bring it to the next level.
Yeah, we kind of shout out all the new listings, the pendings, okay. The solds. You know, it's a statistic business, so we get the statistics out there for everybody to see.
So are you doing information curation, where you're any articles you're posting? I mean, do you do that kind of a thing or just
Absolutely.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So now, are you guys all on LinkedIn and all that? Do you use LinkedIn at all?
Yes, we do.
Facebook, everything.
Yes.
All right. Well, all right. So give me an idea of how your market share is going. Are you going up? Are you going sideways? How many agents do you have, and are you building? What's the next step that we're going to see here for the firm?
We have 46 agents between two offices, which is fantastic in less than 2 years.
Right.
We have over $100 million in sales this year so far, and we're only halfway through. We have about almost $50 million pending. So last year, we were about where we were for the whole year of last year.
Right.
So we're doing so well, and things are moving right along. So, and we're maintaining our number one market share, and really, it's been great. You know, sometimes in these communities, things need to be shaken up in the real estate world, and we did that, and it's been a breath of fresh air, and people always say to us, your signs are everywhere, and we like to hear that.
Now, when an agent starts with you, you know, do you have any new agents that have come aboard?
Oh, yes, sure.
Okay, so when an agent starts with you and they want to try to get into this luxury market, how do you guide them? What are the top two or three things you tell them to do to start working in the luxury market?
Well, this is where I think Debbie, Cheryl, and I have found it to be the most rewarding in starting our own company.
Mm-hmm.
We created our business and really focused on a lot of the luxury sale, you know, and built our business based on the luxury market.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit there and we mentor these brokers and launch them and brand them. And we sit down and ask them what they want to accomplish, and we set goals. And we share our experience and our knowledge with the brokers in our company, and it's been the most rewarding.
And one of the favorite things in our company, and we have a lot of happy brokers in this down market, but we actually teach classes, and we share our secrets of success, which normally brokers won't do, and we make sure that our brokers are armed to go out there and prepared to go out, and we have seen unbelievable rising of success within our troops. So we're just thrilled.
Okay, so I'm a guy listening to this thing out in Phoenix, and I want to know one of these secrets of success. Come on, you open the door. Give me a secret.
You know, a secret of success. I'll tell you one secret to success is motivating a sales force. And coming from a large company. I didn't experience it quite the way the culture is in our company. It's a culture of that the brokers are heroes. They are the heroes. They are our future. They are to be nurtured and supported and mentored. And that's a very motivating factor for new brokers.
And one of the secrets of success, and you've probably experienced in many different professions, but answer your phone.
Yeah. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean,
return
how many
a phone call.
And people call you back a day later, six hours later. I mean, that's the one thing we do say is just answer your phone. And somebody's not going to go to broker number two, three, and four. You know, it's hard for us to do business sometimes because you can't get in touch with the brokers. So I think it has to be that instant communication we were talking about. You know, it's the texting, it's the emails, it's the answering of the phone, it's the constant communication. That is right now, I think, the most important thing that a broker can do is keeping in touch and communication, period.
All right. Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to be right back with Amy Meisner and Debbie Benoit right after this quick message.
You worked too hard. You ate too much. The cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from Old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Ah, those Speedy Alka-Seltzer bubbles burst into action to relieve your upset stomach and aching head fast. If only as directed. Oh, what a relief it is. What a relief.
Okay, well, welcome back to the Property Beat. We'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question you'd like to ask our guests, you can simply call us, 347-989-0439. So how about some advice for the agents out there that are still holding on to old ways of doing business? Maybe they're reluctant to embrace technology systems. What would you have to say to those agents?
I would say one thing. If they don't feel comfortable embracing that technology, and it's like you can't teach an old horse new tricks, team up with a younger broker that can bring you into the real world, you know?
Or hire an assistant who can handle those technologies that you're uncomfortable with. It's the only way that they're going to, you know, keep their status. You know, we all three of us have assistants and multiple assistants, but we're all very tech savvy, but we also have assistants who are that way as well. And like I said, you have to keep up with it. So if you don't want to do it, then hire somebody who will do it for you.
Okay.
Good advice.
Yeah, definitely. Well, folks, as we close out the show, Amy, Debbie, give us three tips for a luxury seller in today's market.
Three tips. Photography, photography, photography.
All right.
Make sure you have great pictures on the internet. Your virtual tours are beautiful. Remember, positioning is very, very important. And the other three tips is pricing, pricing, pricing.
Now I'm going to add the third tip.
Okay.
The right broker, broker, broker.
Oh,
you really need a broker that understands the luxury market. That's connected, that networks the luxury market, that's meeting those buyers. It doesn't help to have a broker that is not connected. And if you have the beautiful pictures and you have the right price, without the right designated listing agent, you need all three.
That's your trifecta.
I like it. Well, thanks to our listening audience for tuning in to today's show. We'd like to thank Debbie and Amy, Debbie Benoit and Amy Meisner. And you can find them at BenoitMeisnerSimon.com. Thanks, ladies, for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. No problem.
All right, Mr. Producer, that's it. Take us out. Well, that's a wrap for our show today, folks. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Property Beat. We'd like to remind you that if you have any questions you'd like answered on our next show, you can simply email us at questions@thepropertybeat.com. You can also follow our blog at thepropertybeat.com, where you'll get news, tips, and stories about today's real estate industry. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with Jonathan Nicholas, saying so long. Thanks for tuning in.